You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
What, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? I mean, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Feel it, you feel it?
It's a faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who? A fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Who are you?
I'm glad you asked that again. Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage, and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe. Now please, get off this planet while you still have a choice.
Good morning, everybody. We're recording this for an episode of the Earth Station Who podcast, which will be available probably by the end of this next week. So you can find us up on the ESO Network or wherever fine podcasts are found, on iTunes, app, Stitcher Radio, and such. And just look under Earth Station Who. We have a great crew for us. This is the final day of Wholanta. Literally.
The final.
The final Wholanta.
Yeah, the final Wholanta.
So that's kind of daunting if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Mike Faber. I'm the host of the Earth Station Who podcast. Down to my left.
Howdy.
Your name, sir?
I am Mike Gordon.
Are you still loading?
I'm still loading. I'm about 84% complete.
That's awesome. And next up?
I'm Kirby Bartlett Sloan. I'm one of the co-hosts of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, which is not part of ESO, but I hang around.
And to my right, returning to Earth Station Who, the lovely and talented Jennifer Hartshorne.
Hello, sweetie.
Welcome back.
Why, thank you very much.
It is really good to have you back.
It's wonderful to be here.
And we are going to be talking about, who was your first actor? I think that would be a great topic to talk about. And the way we do our shows, especially our live ones like this, we get our audience involved. So please jump in. We want to talk to you guys out there in the audience. And we're going to basically talk about, you know, why Doctor Who caught our attention first off, who was the first, and why did you decide to stick with the show? Because there's so many TV shows, even growing up as kids and such, you know, that could have gotten our attention and so. And, you know, and Doctor Who was very unique in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a lot of fun to find out from each one of us where and how and why, basically. For those at home who are listening, you can write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. Or if you have a feedback, we definitely would love to hear from you at 404-963-9057. All right, let's get started with this. I'm going to open it up to everybody here. Where did you start with Doctor Who? Ladies first.
All right. My first Doctor was the fifth Doctor, Peter Davison.
Okay.
I discovered Doctor Who when I was 10 or 11 years old, I think. And I believe it was the episode The Awakening.
Oh.
Although I missed some, and it was shortly after that PBS was running a fun drive, and so they showed the five Doctors out of sequence.
Of course.
Like you do. And I was just absolutely fascinated. There was nothing like it, really, on TV at the time. I was, you know, a big nerd and loved my PBS. My mom was, like, completely addicted to Cosmos and, you know, all the nature and all the documentaries and things. And we got to see full episodes, like full stories, I should say. On my station, like, you know, movie length, basically.
Oh, yeah.
On Saturdays. I don't know how people could stand seeing just, like, a tiny piece of the story. That would have driven me crazy. But yeah, so I watched the Peter Davison era, and then Colin was coming on board, but we didn't have those episodes in the U.S. yet. So my PBS station went back to three.
Oh, really?
And so I went from 5 to 3 to 4.
Right.
To 5 to 6, and at some point we'll probably talk about what happened at that point.
We'll get to there. We will get to it. So they just, the station you watched on, they showed the full story.
Right.
Okay.
New Hampshire Public Television. Woohoo!
So what about it, though, grabbed you?
Gosh.
Because it could have been this, or upstairs, downstairs, or you know, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I mean, it could have been, and don't get me wrong, as I got older, I actually loved Upstairs, Downstairs. But it was, The couple of episodes that I saw early on were actually, this is why I'm so excited to talk to Janet Fielding today, they were very Tegan-focused.
Right.
In that era, there were a number, The Awakening, Kinda, Snake Dance, things like that, that were very focused on the personal experiences, the things that the companion went through, not just as a person to be rescued, but actually very much having adventures of their own.
Sure.
And there were not a lot of shows that had female characters taking a lead role in science fiction at the time.
Totally makes sense. Mikey, what about you?
My first doctor is Doctor Number 4, Tom Baker.
Of course.
The
gateway drug.
I grew up in Massachusetts. And the PBS station there showed Doctor Who, I think it was every night at 7:30. It was only a half hour.
Right.
Remember that. And I wasn't able to catch it, like, every night, because I had, you know, kid stuff going on at the time, I guess. And we had a VCR, but I think that came a little bit later. Yeah, that didn't come until, like, the 80s. So I was able to catch it here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But I really appreciated it. I really liked the humor in it.
Okay.
I really liked, I even from an early age, I really liked British programming and British sense of humor.
Sure.
I think around the same time. I remember the same time, of course, this was after Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica, and so sci-fi was, like, really on my mind. And this was a little bit of a different take on that, but still kind of tied into some of those things. I was listening to the public radio, because they were doing a Star Wars radio show, and they were also doing Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yep.
Right, of course.
And then it's funny, because I got to the point where I enjoyed, like, I wanted to listen to, like, I couldn't wait, because Hitchhikers aired after the Star Wars. So I actually enjoyed, like, was looking forward to Hitchhikers more than I was the Star Wars radio show. But I didn't know at the time that Douglas Adams was writing for Doctor Who, but I guess that connection was there. And then the other things that were attracted me to it were, of course, Sarah Jane Smith and Leela.
Details.
Yeah, you know. So... but I really like the storytelling too. I like the cliffhanger storytelling, and I grew up in watching Batman 66 and syndication. My mom watched soaps. I've always been a big fan of cliffhangers and that kind of storytelling, so I think that was another reason why I was attracted to the serialized Doctor Who episodes.
Sure.
When Tom left, I left. I remember watching The Five Doctors, because Tom was supposed to be in it, and I was really upset. I stayed off Doctor Who. I thought about it occasionally, but I just didn't get back into it until the Fox movie.
I'm sorry.
So I actually didn't hate that, you know? I thought it had good potential. I thought it had some potential. I really liked Paul. I liked the fact that they kept continuity. There was a lot of things I liked about it. But, of course, it didn't continue.
Right.
So then I just kind of didn't continue with it, obviously, either. I never went back to watch the classic stuff until New Who came on. But as soon as New Who was there and available to me to watch, I watched it, and then I went all in. I started watching, I mean, I got involved with you guys. I started watching classical. Like, I'm just, you know, it's almost like I was kind of a fan, but I just didn't, like, get back into it at all at mm-hmm. some point. And sure. I was just waiting for something to happen. So thank you, Russell G. Davies, for making something happen. Awesome. So I can get back into it.
What about you, Kirby?
When I was a teen, I was a big Trekkie. And I got involved with science fiction clubs and stuff. And I didn't discover Doctor Who until college. But I'm older than most of you guys. So I had heard of Doctor Who. And I used to work in a public library shelving books. And I saw science fiction books about science fiction on TV and stuff. And I opened up this one book and there was an article about Doctor Who. And they had a picture of this weird monster. I'm going, what is this? Later found out it was a Zygon. I'm going, that looks like crap. Actually, I like the Zygons.
And the Zygons are one of the better looking ones.
I know. I like the Zygons now. But I thought, okay, it was my sophomore year in college. And classes had just ended. And I actually have my... podcast, no visuals, but my May 1980 calendar, I wrote down Doctor Who, The Hand of Fear. And our Chicago PBS was showing them every night, half an hour at a time. I sat down, what is this thing? I'm going to watch it. And I was pulled in immediately. And it was... I didn't know that companions left. That was also somewhat disturbing because I loved Sarah Jane from the beginning, from the moment I saw her.
You just happened to see her.
I happened to see her last episode, last story. And I go, wait, what's going on here? But I just stuck with it in college, way back then. I couldn't afford a TV. I had to watch TV in the student center where we had TV rooms. And I ended up getting into the TV room just before, about half an hour before, to reserve the TV. And within 6 months, we had a Doctor Who group that was gathering every every afternoon. Yeah, I was going to Northern Illinois University, so we created a unit, the United Northern Illinois Time Lords.
Nice.
That is awesome.
And...
okay, I'm going to open it to anyone out there. How about you? What drew you to Doctor Who? You know, what was, you know, what caught your eye about it? You were flipping
those
channels.
Those great special effects.
You know, the special effects get a lot of, like, crap, but I will say that, you know, I mean...
Oh, the bubble wrap monsters.
I mean, look, I didn't... At the time, I mean... I saw a lot of bad special effects. I mean, I grew up watching, you know, like you, Star Trek, and Star Trek where it had the better effects, but there were, like, tons of stuff that had awful effects. Awful effects were, like, the norm. So...
I grew up doing community theater, so I was used to, like, the handmade sets kind of thing, so...
So I always, was able to get past it to a point. I mean, there's certain times where you're like, ugh, yeah, but, you know...
When I first saw it, I thought it was all, like, I thought it was public access or something like that. And that's how bad the special effects, I thought, were. What's up?
Well, first exposure to Doctor Who, I was in Hungry Horse, Montana last year to go hiking in Glacier. And in the evening, the only channel that we could get on the cabin was the PBS channel out of Kalispell, which was having a Doctor Who marathon.
Awesome.
To commemorate the rediscovery of some of Patrick Troughton's works.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I can't remember whether it was the War Games or the Enemy of the World or whatever. Well, I'd been in Monk in 87 where Patrick Troughton died. I didn't know who he was, so I watched it. And since when I got home, I got a BritBox subscription. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of interesting because I was born November 22nd, so now I know why my mom never wrapped the fire truck she gave me on my third birthday. But that was when Doctor Who, you know, that was the very first episode. So I've been working forward through a BritBox subscription from Hartnell on through.
That's
awesome. Right now I've exited the Seventh Doctor, Sylvester McCoy, mm-hmm. and I'm working through the Paul McGann audio stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't watched
awesome.
Any of the new stuff yet, so I feel like I'm only halfway educated in the whole
that
thing.
Is awesome.
But the depth and variety of it, I mean, as being somebody, like I remember Star Trek when it first aired. I mean, that was Batman and Star Trek. Those were two of my favorite shows of the week. And the idea that there was this whole fandom of such immense length and complexity that I, as somebody who'd been a science fiction person since my earliest childhood, had no knowledge of, it's been a really exciting voyage of discovery. In fact, it's rather distressing to me to find out this is the Atlanta Who convention, just as I've discovered it, and now it's closing shop. So, such is the nature of things. But that's me.
Every ending, though, has a new beginning. Just remember that. You know, it's never over. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. What about you guys out there? Okay.
I started watching in Portland. As far as I can recall, he's in the broadcast Doctor Who website like July 1980. In Chicago, WTTW.
Right.
And when they were showing the 25-minute episodes like at 5 or 5.30.
Something like that, yeah.
Week. And my earliest memory is watching the Ark in Space.
Awesome.
And being scared witless when the dead worm fell out. And it was just Tom Baker... looked like no other character on television.
Very true.
It was funny. It was just, I think, even today, just the mystery of it. Just the slow pace of trying to, okay, what's happening here?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I didn't see it all at once, I think, was probably kept me coming back each evening during the week. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that it was a 25-minute episode as opposed to the whole, you know, hour and a half or whatever. Mm-hmm. One fell swoop. So
that's pretty awesome. In the back?
Yeah, I started when I was in college, probably around 2000. My cousin got me into it. I had seen a little Tom Baker kid, but I think the first thing I truly watched was Pals. And I was like, this is cool. And then I watched Earthshock, and I love the cyborg. And, mm-hmm. You know, always a big sci-fi fan. I think the concepts and the mythology is what hooked me. So I think... Hardcore, I dove in with Peter Davis and really, really enjoyed that run of episodes. And, you know, that'll, he'll always be my first, so to speak.
That's awesome, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone always has their first.
Yeah.
And they always have a soft spot for that Doctor.
Yeah.
That's one of the cool things about Doctor Who. Yeah. And that's the Doctor Who keeps on reinventing itself. And that's, even we're finding that now with Jodie as the Doctor. And the show just keeps on reinventing. And the show is about change. And, you know, over the 55, almost 56 years now, that's the one constant in it. The show is going to change. The only thing that's not is the outside of the TARDIS. So, slightly, but, you know.
Yeah.
Quick
thing. The first time I heard Doctor Who was in a 1972 TV Guide article, which I still have.
Really?
Wow.
Yes, it had pictures from the Sea Devils, which was, I think, currently airing at that time,
mm-hmm.
or something. But it was, and then I didn't hear about it for a while. I thought I started watching it in 74, but according to Red, White, and Who, in 76. But I started watching it on WGBH in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's one.
Yep. My first episode was the last part of Doctor Who and the Silurians. I didn't know anything about time loops, so I wrote in my diary, "The Doctor is your typical eccentric English gentleman."
Oh, that's awesome.
There was nothing about Doctor Who anywhere, so I had to pick up the facts from the series, time loops, what's a time loop. So my first Doctor was Pertwee, and I still love John Pertwee, and I still love Roger Delgado.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was just evil because he could be, and I just loved that. I also remember when the Tom Baker once came on commercial TV with the Howard De Silva narrations.
Mm-hmm. I remember those.
I don't know if anybody else remembers that.
But the Howard De Silva intros were part of the PBS ones on WTTW, weren't they?
Ours were on a couple of stations.
I think so.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Nicole.
I started watching, for some reason, our high school started in eighth grade as a ninth grade, and I had met this girl, and we were talking about television. We were both very geeky, and she said, "So, what shows do you like?" And I said, "I like The Tomorrow People."
Mm-hmm.
And so she
said, "Oh, yeah." Because you were watching probably on Nickelodeon.
And I was like, "What is that?" And she was like, "You've got to be kidding." Tomorrow People, they never heard of Doctor Who, and I was like, "I'm sorry," you know. And so she said, okay, Saturday, go home. I was in Atlanta. She said, turn on PBS and watch it. And at the time, they were airing season 14 with Tom Baker. Mm-hmm. And so I know it was sometime that season because I remember the secondary council room was my first harvest. Mm. That's the only memory I have. But I was just so caught up in it. I mean, it was just, I couldn't wait on Saturdays to just sit, and they would usually just play it as an omnibus. And I loved when they would have the fundraisers, so they would play stuff all day. And it was such, I've always been a writer, and I just loved the way it captured my imagination. It was a different setting each time, and it was changing up. And even though the cast would come and go, it still felt fresh. And that was what I think attracted me to it the most. So.
That is awesome.
I was also very lucky that when I was 14, again, they announced it on the PBS station that Patrick Troughton was doing a tour, and conventions were kind of different then. This was really some person who had like a truck full of Doctor Who memorabilia and then got Patrick Troughton to come and
right.
Q&A.
Yeah.
That was kind of what the convention was. There was a costume contest, which I won, playing Tegan, wearing the white outfit with the like strapless thing and the shorts. So yes, I won my first costume contest.
You should bring that up in the end.
You know. That's gonna happen. So I had never seen any of his episodes.
Cool.
And it was kind of weird. And then shortly after that, I started going to Nerd Summer Camp, CTY, Center for Academically Talented Youth. And then that was when I met a bunch of other fans and a bunch of other people my age who were really, really into it and really excited about it. And as a result of one of the people that I met through that, he ended up calling me, of course, because pre-email, and saying, what are you doing this weekend? And I'm like, I don't know. This was when I was like 16, I think. And I said, I don't know. And he's like, Kate, can you get your mom to bring you down as far as Concord? I'm like, why? And he said, the Massachusetts, and those of you who were in Massachusetts at the time, the Massachusetts station is doing a one evening meet and greet with Colin and Tom Baker.
Oh.
And I was like, I will find a way to get there. So my mom drove me down as far as Concord. They picked me up, and we went down. And it was just like the two of them completely jet-lagged, you know, saying, I guess I'll sign some autographs. But it was very exciting. And that first one is where I got my poster. The Doctor Who exhibition experience or something, which Patrick Troughton signed. And then I got both Bakers to sign it. And then when I started doing Hulanta and the other conventions around here, I got a few more. So I now have 2, 4, 5, 6, 8. I think that's it. 2, 4, 5, 6, 8. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. I thought that was what the movie The Fabulous Baker Boys was about, but I was disappointed. I got to give a shout out to, and I know he's not here, Carl, but maybe he'll listen to this, maybe he won't at some point. But in high school, I had a good friend named Matt Black. We went to high school together, we were on the swim team together, and he was uber into Doctor Who. In fact, he had a Fourth Doctor scarf.
Ooh.
That he wore in high school, like every day in the winter. And he, I don't know how, like I always marveled at him because he did not get, like back in those days, like you did not like wear your freak flag, you know? And yet he managed to like not get a lot of crap about it. Yeah, I don't know if anybody really understood.
They probably didn't get it.
They just like,
thought
oh,
his
he's
mom
got a
made
really
a
long scarf.
Yeah.
But I think his mom had made it or something like that. But anyway, yeah, this is like freshman year in high school, and you would think that would be a red flag, and he would just get beat up every day, but he didn't. We talked Doctor Who a lot because he was so into it. And so even though I couldn't watch it or I wasn't watching it all the time, I was constantly talking about it. I remember he let me borrow the novelization of Invasion of the Dinosaurs. And so I read that, and when I read it, there's nothing in that book that it clarifies which doctor it is.
Oh.
So I naturally assumed it was Tom. And so every time I think of that story, I think it's a Tom Baker story, and it's not. So when I finally saw the Pertwee one, I was like, this is weird. But the novelization totally works. I guess that's cool. I don't know if the other novelizations do that, where they don't clarify what doctor it is. But I think going in not knowing is kind of interesting.
That's pretty awesome, though. Because, yeah, I came to Doctor Who fairly similar to all of you guys. Probably 79 or so. Was home on a Saturday afternoon, and I was playing around with the cable box, seeing what channels I could try to sneak in and everything. And so I was playing with the tuner and everything. And one of the stations we didn't get was WOR from New York. And they were showing Doctor Who on Saturday afternoons. And all of a sudden, on my TV popped up this guy with really big teeth. He was wearing a Sherlock Holmes hat. And he was fighting these Asian guys and this little midget.
Oh, God, what an episode to come in.
And I was just like hooked right there, hook, line, and sinker. And they showed the whole episode, the whole storyline. And so I got to watch all the way through, you know, the death of Magnus Creel and everything. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome. Then it disappeared on me. I couldn't get that back. I was trying to beg my parents to get, you know, can you pay for the upgrade for cable so I can see it? But no. But we had, at the time, at the shopping mall, we had the little bookstore, like Barnes & Noble or whatever. And, or actually, it was B. Dalton. And they had...
Dalton in the books.
Yep. They had a science fiction section, mm-hmm. and I saw all of a sudden these novelizations. They had the whole series of the American printing of Doctor Who.
Wow!
So it was, you know, it was the Cybermen story. It was mm-hmm. Tom's first Cybermen story. It was the Santorans. It was, mm-hmm. you know, then they had the Dalek invasion from Pertwee, or mm-hmm. they also had the Green Death, yep. you know, and so it was awesome to read. I picked those up, and I requested, talked to the person at the information desk, and they said, oh yeah, we can import for you the Target books,
ooh.
And we can order those for you, and we can get those at regular cover price.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yes, please. I ended up, before I even started watching Doctor Who,
mm-hmm.
I started collecting the Target books.
That's awesome.
And so all the way back from the first Doctor
mm-hmm.
on, and also at the time Marvel Comics had brought out the reprints of the Doctor Who's Dave Gibbons.
Oh yeah, series. Marvel Premiere. I had those exactly. issues. Yeah, I bought those.
I picked up those, you know, and so I was starting to get obsessed with Doctor Who. And then the PBS station in Washington, D.C. started playing Doctor Who, but at 11 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And so for my bar mitzvah, my parents gave me my first TV. And so I watched Doctor Who, you know, every night. And from Monday through Friday, they showed the Tom Baker stories.
Mm-hmm.
But when they got to the end of the Baker stories, they started over again.
Mm-hmm.
So I became very versed in Tom Baker. You know, then they decided at the pledge time, hey, there's, you know, because we kept on seeing him turn into Peter. And it was like, but then it, and then we went back. So we got to, they finally said, we're going to show the Peter Davison ones for the pledge drive. And they brought Peter into town.
Cool.
So my parents actually drove me down to meet him
mm-hmm.
and everything. And I had the same reaction to him, pretty much what I felt like when we met him in Huntsville.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very generous and very friendly to the kids. But, you know, it was a neat experience to meet my first doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And then they showed all the Peter stories all the way through, I think it was his first two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ended it with the five doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went back to Tom. So, but I was able through other means to start watching. You know, I got to start seeing Patrick and John and everything. I never saw a Hartnell story probably until like maybe 20 years ago.
I never saw Hartnell's story until I watched it on for ESW.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't see a Hartnell story until about, you know, after New Who, so when we did it for the podcast.
My first Hartnell story was probably around 1981, 82 at a science fiction convention where someone had a copy of just the first episode of An Unearthly Child. I had no idea the rest of the story was awful.
But the thing was, once I got to college, because I got teased all the time about Doctor Who, because I was an art major in high school, you know, even, and I designed cereal boxes called Whovios and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, and got teased mercilessly because a lot of my illustrations, I did stuff with Doctor Who in it. And, you know, things like that. But in college, I met like-minded people, you know, who loved Doctor Who. We started watching the Sylvester McCoy stories. And those were amazing because we were watching bootleg copies of it. We were watching Sylvester. We were also watching Red Dwarf and, you know, getting into all that type of stuff. And it was just awesome. And then the series ended. And, you know, I thought, okay, that's it for Doctor Who. And then they brought the TV movie back. And basically, when the TV movie, it was like, I was already married to my first wife, and, oh, Doctor Who's here, you know, this is going to be awesome. She was like,
introduce her to Doctor Who.
Exactly. It's going to be great. And we watched it, and she was like, that's it? I should have ended it then with her, but I should have done better. But
yeah, I didn't see the TV movie when it came out, because I loved Doctor Who so much that the idea of an American station doing it, having an American companion, I was.
But really, Perry was an American companion.
and that's another thing we can talk about. But yeah, I was very apprehensive about it, and I figured I'll ask somebody to record it on DVD because we were still doing DVDs there at the time, and tell me how it is. And I asked a couple people, and they're like, Jen, don't watch it. Just don't watch it. It will make you mad. He kisses her. And I'm like, that's it. I'm done. No, none of this.
It was interesting, though, because Doctor Who went away for me. I didn't know anything about Big Finish. I didn't know anything. I read Human Nature, you know, because I saw it at a bookstore. And so I picked that up, and you know, I said, okay, just like Star Trek, and my love for it will be part of my past, and I'll still always love it.
Sure.
And I had started hearing rumors about that they were talking about bringing it back. I had heard rumors that Steven Spielberg wanted to bring it back with Michael Jackson as the Doctor. I had heard all these, you know, I still followed all these type of rumors and stuff. And then I saw the first picture of Chris as the Doctor. And how can I watch this? And I was lucky enough to be living in Seattle at the time. And pretty much right before it was going to premiere, I moved here. But I had friends of mine and who still lived out there. And Seattle has the luckiness to be able to get Canadian.
Yes, same in New Hampshire.
Exactly. We get Canadian channels on our cable system. And so they were able to see the new Doctor Who. So friends of mine, we were using their old VHS and recording it for me, and were putting it up on the computer, so I was able to see the first couple. And it was just like, wow. Then I started seeing people, actually I started coming to Dragon Con, and I started seeing people dressed as Tennant with the 3D glasses and everything, and it was just like, oh, and then Sci-Fi started showing it. That was it.
I fell away from the show as well. Probably, I moved away from the Chicago area and moved to Lexington, Kentucky, where they didn't show it. And I still kept up as much as I could. I remember going to a science fiction convention around 82, 83, taking my VCR and hooking up. We basically had a mini track of Doctor Who that was not official. A bunch of us got together and Well, we hooked together four or five VCRs and copied bootleg.
We don't know anything, and we don't condone it here on the network. No.
And so that's how I saw the Three Doctors for the first time.
Right.
That's how I saw Blake 7 for the first time.
Yes.
And then it just kind of, I'd watch those over and over and over, and it just kind of fell away from me. I remember when the TV movie came out, I remember watching it, but not being terribly impressed. It didn't make me come back. I think I even recorded it on VHS, but I don't know where that one is.
And I probably have it somewhere.
And then
I might have recorded over it actually.
About a year before RTD brought it back. No, actually, it was about 3 years before we got Netflix DVDs sent to us. I started catching up.
Mm.
And that's when I fell back in and became a fan again. Now, getting back to the novelizations that you were getting the Pinnacle books.
Correct.
Those have, every one of them, has this great introduction. It's the same introduction in all of them. It's Harlan Ellison wrote it.
Exactly.
And Harlan
awesome.
was very negative towards television. Most television.
Mm-hmm.
And he is absolutely gushing.
About Doctor Who.
About Doctor Who. It's worth it. Just, you can find that introduction online. It's worth it. Find it, read it.
Mm. Hell, if you can find the books.
Yeah, I've got them all.
Of course you do, Kurt.
I bought them back when I was, before I fell away from the show.
What about you guys out there? Was there any, you know, thing that, like, oh, this is awesome, I got to start watching this, you know, or, oh, my friends are telling me all about this. You know, what drew you to it, you know? Sir?
So I fell into it basically because it was something that was filling me. Small hours of the morning on mid-watch. When I was in the last year that I was in the Navy. And then I moved to Texas, and our local PBS station had it, and my group of friends and I would have a game night, and we would break up the game in time to watch Doctor Who and Red Dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Not a bad way to do it.
I started with Tom Baker.
Cool. That is awesome. And it's kind of neat because, like, my love of Doctor Who got me to be able to introduce it to my wife, to be able to introduce it to my son, who's a huge Whovian now. And, you know, he knows almost about it as much as I do. And it's just awesome to be able to do stuff to pass it on and everything. And that's what I hope, you know, you out there, both here in the audience and at home, are doing, is, you know, passing on your love to it to the mm-hmm. next generation so the show can continue.
I tried, but my middle daughter, who was a big Whovian for a long time, fell away during Capaldi. She won't watch at all.
Will she watch old stuff? Or
She wasn't really into the old stuff. Now, my oldest daughter watches all old ones with me, because on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, we're going through all the stories in sequence, where we just started Romana 2.
Mm.
And my oldest daughter, she's 25. She's watching with me. And she loves the old ones.
That is cool. And
but the middle one, who is the biggest geek of them all, she used to come to this convention. She stopped watching.
Just because of Capaldi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's up?
I started watching on about 7 in 1978, and mine was also Tom Baker with The Talent of Shining.
What? It's so weird that I've heard from so many people that was their first episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can remember the first episode was the one where they're in the sewer and there's this rain.
Exactly. Yes. We watched the same show.
Yeah, you know, Leela, and that was the very first one. And then I just, you know, kept on watching. I do like to tell this story, though. My parents were stationed in Northern Ireland when I was in the Navy, and so my parents were trying to find information on the news about President Kennedy had died the day before, and so they mm-hmm. were tuning on, you know, TV, and so they saw the very first episode back then, and then they also saw all the Hartnell years. and the very first season of Patrick Troughton. And my dad said, you know, when he saw me watching later on in the 80s, and he says, you know, that actor hasn't always been the lead doctor, but they've had another guy play it.
And you probably looked at him. You probably looked at him and went, yeah. What do you mean?
So I told all my friends, you know, that watching, you know, that he can change like that. So I just basically didn't act like it was, you know, I was just making it up. And so then when, you know, Tom Baker regenerated into Peter Davidson, I knew, you know, at that time that he can change. That was really cool for me.
That is awesome. It's neat because when you have stories like that, and you know, we have friends who've been on the show before, and some of them have been watching literally since the Hartnell era and such, and you know, and we like to tease them about how old they are, but that's a different story. But it's just awesome that they stuck with the show, and you know, hearing the tales of, you know, when I was a kid, I used to hide behind the couch because the Daleks were on, you know. Or we used to run down the street playing the Doctor and the Daleks, you know. It was just awesome just to think about.
So yeah, I think that's one of the things that's appealing to, not only because of the show itself, I think one of the things that's appealing about Doctor Who is that when you meet other people, the way they discovered it is a lot different than the way you discovered it.
There's no two ways the same.
Exactly, and it's just sort of nice. And the fact that, you know, growing up and at least through our experiences, you know, we had to, if you wanted to get more Doctor Who, you had to work for it. You know, you had to like seek it out depending
on prove yourself.
If you moved to a different place, you had to figure out, you know, what that PBS schedule was like, or you had to look for the books, you had to get the tapes. Even with New Who, like even like 15 years ago or whatever it was, when New Who started, like, it didn't come to the States right away.
No.
So you had to find other ways to try to, like, you know, to try
up,
to get
up
it.
Up until,
like, you know,
BBC America took it over from SIFI, or whatever they called it.
Whatever they're calling it.
Exactly. Either there was a delay in them broadcasting it by 6 months sometimes.
Oh, sure.
And when they showed the episodes, they were edited down from the original.
Yeah.
And that also bugged the crap out of me.
Yeah, so you had to sort of work to get it, and there was just sort of this sort of, like, I don't know, this, like, this thing that made it, like, even more special because of all of that.
Exactly. And that's what's great about Doctor Who, is it's worth it to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I still know people that watch it on a British feed and such to this day. What's up?
We had a friend who was, he sent us through, we didn't get Jody, he had the 3 meter dish.
Right.
He had the broadcast and send them to people. But I just wanted to share a memory of the TV movie, which I didn't mind the American Companion as much as I had. I minded Eric Roberts as the doctor.
That too.
You mean the drag master?
Anyway, the master. Anyway, when the TV movie aired, the local Doctor Who club, we took over a sports bar and watched it on the big screen TVs at the sports bar, and that was a lot of fun.
Cool.
We got to see it together.
Really? Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was the famous Waitrons. The restaurant next door had a sign that said Waitrons as well.
What's up?
I think that, like, there's also the collection standpoint of, like, I gotta get the DVDs, I gotta get the Blu-ray, I gotta get the novel, I gotta go back to the commercial. There's always, it's like multifaceted in a way that Star Wars is too, I guess, and that you can, there's just always something new to collect in the fandom of Who, and so.
Well, especially now since they're restoring a lot of old series and bringing it out on Blu-ray. And the collected of Tom's first season, his last season, Peter's first season. And so it's interesting to see what they're doing with that. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, like, I my daughter's 3 and a half. I buy these Rob Hargrave books, and they do, like, Doctor First, Doctor Second.
Oh, those are great.
Oh, yes, I've seen those.
Also, I think she's too young to really watch it and really sit there and watch it, but
she'll say, let's read the one with the Daleks. I like the Daleks. There's icons.
Start them early.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so she really likes that. She, I don't know if she quite grasped the concepts of regeneration, obviously, but, you know, I just introducing her, you know, see natural light when she gets older. So
mm-hmm. Of course.
That's cool, you know.
Go ahead.
And my first doctor was the ninth doctor, and my sister-in-law, who's with me, first got me to him probably 4 to 5 years ago, and I binge-watched from Rose all the way through to probably part of Kenneth.
Okay.
And caught myself up, and we got to watch them in real time as the seasons went on, and now we've got a small movie in who has his room decorated in Doctor Who.
Awesome.
He's raising them up right. My husband's always liked it. I don't know that he's as big a fan as we are, but he's watched them since Tom Baker.
Wow.
Love it.
Oh, that's awesome. And it's great that you can do that and that you pass, like we say, pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gonna be generational, as you know. And it already has in a lot of ways done that. You know, doing it to your kids, doing it to your nieces and nephews. You know, it's just like, and it's awesome. You know, when my nieces and nephew come down at the holidays, are we going to watch the holiday special, Uncle Mike? You know, and, you know, it's just like, yes, I succeeded.
Things you don't hear about Star Wars.
Exactly. Thank God. That is awesome. Wow. You had to go there. I try to block that thing out of my mind.
We all do.
Yeah, I know. But it's interesting, especially nowadays when there's so much gaps between seasons
mm-hmm.
and such. And
it's wonderful that there's so much that we can go back to, and that there's so much, there's Big Finish, and there's, you know, like, if I like a TV show, like, for example, Better Call Saul, my favorite non-genre TV show, there's nothing in between. There's no content for like a year in between seasons.
Look at Game of Thrones.
Oh, well.
2 years.
Yeah, exactly. And it's wonderful that we have, I mean, there are very few people. I know most of those people in the Southeast are probably in this room right now, but there's not a lot of people who have seen and heard and read everything there is about Doctor Who. It seems like there's always more that you can go back to.
I met somebody yesterday. Mm-hmm. They came up to a table, and they were looking around, and we started talking about how they got into Doctor mm-hmm. Who and everything. They actually got into it because of Big Finish. They mm-hmm. had never heard of the TV
That's
show.
Different.
And they were over in the UK, and they went into one of the shops,
mm-hmm.
and they had them on the shelves.
Was this during the Wilderness years? Or
yeah.
Oh,
it was before the new series
yeah.
came back.
Ah,
and,
that makes sense.
And they started picking up the Peter Davison and
cool.
Paul McGann stuff.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, oh, this stuff is amazing. And they got hooked that way. It was pretty awesome.
I heard someone say that the amazing thing about with Big Finish is it's almost like it's the fanfic that you know that the people write to fill in the gaps in the story. Only you actually have the real actors doing it.
Exactly, which is awesome. And thank you, Mr. Moffat, for making some of it actually canon.
Yes.
So it's pretty awesome. So yeah, this is cool to be able to talk to you guys about it and to hear your stories. And let's not stop. Let's keep on telling these stories. Tell people how you get into it. And that's what's great about Doctor Who, to be able to share it with everybody like that. What's up?
Well, my experience is probably a little bit different than the rest of you in this room, since I've come to it relatively recently.
Which is awesome.
But
and
the thing that I
here.
Find fascinating about it, as far as a technique of a premise for storytelling, you have
mm-hmm.
an immortal character who can insert himself at any point in time
mm-hmm.
and at any point in space. It is infinitely flexible.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that intrigues me about it is it's like this enormous jigsaw puzzle, and you're trying to fit the pieces together, but I don't know whether there's any underlying pattern, but if there's not, there's a certain fun in trying to work with it. I mean, like the Cybermen and the Daleks, how come they have multiple origin stories? Does it survive my own theories about that? But
Is he able to change time? Is he not? Can he go back and see himself? Will he go back and see himself or herself or whatever? It's still an ongoing thing. Even though it's potentially far more complex than even things like the Star Trek universe, which has been around a comparable amount of time. And it's such a tool to perhaps explore some of the profoundest questions that humanity has about itself and its place in the universe.
No, very well said, because, you know, that's always the quick question, you know, and even Doctor Who has changed it over the years about time travel, you know, the whole thing with the fixed points in time, and that you can't change certain things, but other minor things you can fix and change. And look what happened the whole episode with Rose's dad. You know, it created a conundrum because she changed history and brought those silly wraiths that we never saw again. And the whole thing with that. But it's okay for the doctor to change little things. And also, you know,
like Pompeii.
Well, exactly. But the thing is with it, you know, where the doctor, what goes with it is the doctor does meet him or herself throughout time and run into themselves. Because every time, you're bound to run it. If you travel as much as the doctor does, you're bound to run into oneself and just try not to mess up with your history. And, you know, look what happened with Avengers Endgame. You know, that just threw all time travel stuff out the window. But we're not counting that, so. So, but it's interesting. But, what's up?
One thing about Doctor Who that has changed my life.
Really?
Is 9 years ago, I would not have ever imagined I would be in front of an audience talking to people like this. I was very introverted and just would not, I was extremely shy. And Doctor Who fandom has brought me out. And I'm totally comfortable in front of audiences and stuff.
A lot
and podcasts.
Of it. Oh, yeah, of course. And it's interesting because it was the same way in a lot of things. You know, a lot of times getting up here is almost like performing. And, you know, getting up and talking to people. I don't feel nervous at all talking in front of this, you know, crowd. You know, I've sat in front of 1,000 people and talked to them and everything. Not a problem. But, you know, and then talking about, because it's things I love and that you have a passion for. And that circumcises and, you know, basically pushes out what you're going for and circumcedes.
I was looking at the look on your face.
So, but it's the thing about it is it overrides whatever issues I might have with thinking, oh my God, I'm talking in front of a zillion people and everything. And it's just, it's awesome to do. And it helps you come out in a lot of ways and become the, you know, show what you want. And Doctor Who has always been, since day one, I've loved it. And once I discovered it, once I brought it into my life, it's there.
Like a lot of fandoms, I think one of the great things about it is community. And, you know, finding people who are like you, who enjoy the same things that you do, that maybe you have felt for a long time like you were the only one, or that, you know. And it's really weird to be a Doctor Who fan now, like remembering when it was completely not cool. You know, I always tell people that, like, if you had told my 12-year-old self that, you know, in the future, Doctor Who would be one of the most popular TV shows in the world, and, you know, superhero movies would make more money than anything else, and Weird Al would have Grammy Awards, you know, it would have blown my mind. But I think community, and that's why I love small conventions like this. That, you know, I love Dragon Con, of course, but here you get to actually connect with other people more. There's not the huge crowds and the huge drama and the huge parties to the same extent. I'm going to miss having a small hometown con where I get to talk about my favorite nerdy things with my favorite nerdy people.
I think that's a good way to wrap that up, actually. You know, we want to thank everybody for joining us today. You'll be able to hear this up on Earth Station Who probably by the end of the week. And, you know, please listen, subscribe. We're up on every media player you can think of pretty much anymore.
Plus Facebook.
Yep. Exactly.
Good conversations.
Exactly. We have a great, you know, Facebook group. And definitely, you know, want to hear from you. Please, if you have any comments about us, find us, eswpodcast.com or eswpodcast@gmail.com if you want to write us, or we're part of the ESO network.
And can I plug 20 megabyte?
No.
And also there's the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, 20MB to find it, Facebook, everywhere.
That's awesome.
We'll edit that out of the show.
Exactly. And now that I have other things I need to edit out too, so it's perfect. And thank you, Mike Gordon.
As always, my pleasure.
Jennifer Hartshorn.
Wonderful to see you guys again.
Wonderful for you to be back. And Kirby.
Great fun.
Thank you, everyone. My name is Mike Faber. Thank you for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your night.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as $1 a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but now you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is click on the link on the top navigation of the ESO Network website or go to patreon.com/ESO Network. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.